Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, there was no play, but there is a podcast because Catherine Whittaker and myself, David Law, are here with laughter all around, and it's that sort of gallows humour that is enveloping us all at the moment because we've had a day of rain at the Queen's Club. Nobody has seen a single ball hit outside whatsoever, and it is only the third complete washout in 18 years at the Fevertree Championships. Very sorry for all those spectators that came today hoping to watch. They all got a full refund as a result, but that doesn't really, you know, it's something, isn't it, Catherine? But it's a shame. I mean, people, you look at that order of play and you feel like you've won the lottery, don't you, in the morning, yeah. And then you end up with nothing.
Oh. You end up with a really soggy lottery ticket, non-winning lottery ticket. It turns out there doesn't need to be tennis for there to be a tennis podcast.
No,
who knew?
No.
We could be talking about all sorts of things on this thing.
We've got a minute done. 29 minutes to go. I insisted upon this because I've got...
David's got stories, yeah. Apparently. I haven't heard any of them, so I'm as much a listener as you all are.
I'm not really sure what they are yet, but I can feel them coming.
Okay,
But no, look at the day itself. As I mentioned, three washouts in 18 years, which was a surprise to me when we looked at that stat, because, you know, British weather, you kind of assumed that there would have been loads of these things. And yes, there has been rain, but you've usually had windows to be able to play still.
A lot of it was really frustrating rain today. It's rain they would have played in Paris or on any of the clay court tournaments. It's rain they did play in Paris, but you can't. On grass, can you? You can't take any risks at all. And
who would cope if they did? Like, imagine if it was no holds barred tennis, right? And they don't come off for the rain on grass. Who would have coped the best today?
Well, the problem is you can't go full throttle with movement, right? Because you risk slipping, falling over, and doing yourself some mischief. So I guess it's pure shot making.
But also balance, isn't it? Do you know what
it
I would like?
It doesn't matter how balanced you are if you're out of position.
No, but here's my point, is if you're really balanced, you're not that out of position. Do you remember in 2014, that year, there was lots of heat at Wimbledon, and Djokovic played Dimitrov, and they kept on slipping over in the semi-finals. Do you remember that?
Yes.
Because it was a dusty court, and it was all chopped up. And then, straight afterwards... And they were sliding into shots, doing the splits, all that sort of thing. Then Roger Federer came out onto court and just sort of tiptoed around it without barely putting a footprint in the grass.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I think the answer to all who would cope best with these conditions questions is usually Roger Federer, isn't it?
Yeah, but you know, I tell you, I think Andy Murray would when he's because of his movement. I think he's very, very balanced as well.
Pre-metal hip.
Yeah, he tried out his metal hip today. Did you see that? He was indoors with other metal hip maestro.
Playing singles, a singles match between metal hips.
No, it wasn't singles.
Yeah, they hit on the doubles court, I think. So it was Andy Murray and Ken Skupski hitting against the Bryan brothers. And then I think, as reported by George Belshaw of Reporting Everything on Tennis Related on Twitter, he said they had a brief singles hit afterwards.
How interesting.
Tell one of your stories, David, while I verify that.
I missed that. Well, anyway, the other washout news of the past.
Bob Bryan makes singles comeback. Well, I
remember, I remember Bob Bryan beating Tim Henman here on the singles court back in 2001, I'm going to say. And it was also 2001 was one of the last washouts. They then had one in 2001 was when the tournament director was forced to choose who to put on centre court out of Wayne Ferreira against Tim Henman and Pete Sampras against Leighton Hewitt. And Pete Sampras against Leighton Hewitt, world number one against, you know, Hewitt, ended up on court one. And it was very funny.
I remember watching that as a spectator.
What, in the grounds?
No, on the telly.
On the telly.
On the telly.
Oh. I watched it in the grounds, over a hedge. I was looking at, looking over the corner of the court, and that's where the 6 foot sevenness comes into play. And I was able to look over this hedge and watch the world number one against Leighton Hewitt with nobody watching because it wasn't very nice weather.
There was a manic year here in, I'm going to say 20, I feel like it was 2011, when I specifically remember Djokovic played out on court number one, didn't like it at all. He didn't like his foray out onto court number one. But it
2010,
was
of, I think
2010.
It was. Yeah. I think that was the last time he played the tournament until last year, actually. But yeah, you're right. He didn't enjoy having to be moved. But in 2011 was one of the other two washout days.
The Monday final.
Yeah, it caused the Monday final. But it ended up being that amazing day with Tsonga and Andy Murray in the final.
Absolutely brilliant. Yeah.
So, taking the positives, as I'm going to do tomorrow, that does mean you have an absolute bumper order of play to look forward to.
Which we'll get on to in a moment, but just first to confirm, yes, I am not hallucinating. George Belshaw did tweet, now in a true battle of the resurfaced tips, Andy Murray takes on Bob Bryan in singles. And at the end...
Who won that?
Bob Bryan wins and jokes, I didn't win one point. After they sit down, Andy Murray says to him on the bench, not many errors, solid. So that's that then.
Blimey.
Daniela Hunter, during our lengthy rain delay filling on Prime Video today, I asked both Gregor Zedzki and Daniela Hantikova and later on Mark Filipoussis, who visited our studio, to make their pitches to Andy Murray to be his Wimbledon doubles partner.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Greg thinks he's in with a shout.
Does he?
No, not... I hope not, really. But he said, you know, you've gone with Feliciano Lopez. He's big lefty. Big lefty serve. Doesn't mind coming to the net.
Right.
Yeah.
That's his pitch. What did
Filipoussis
go?
Tell you what, though. I mean, I wasn't able to press her on it, but I do intend to. Daniela, I think if he called Daniela and said, will you come out of retirement to play mixed doubles with me at Wimbledon, she'd say yes. And she is a career Grand Slam mixed doubles champion.
Career Grand Slam?
Yeah, she's won all four.
Wow. That's a good stat. I like that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, definitely push her on that.
Because she played the exhibition last week in Cluj, Romania, the Simona Halep exhibition, which sounds like it was just a mind-boggling success. It was
full house, wasn't it?
Total full house. I think 11,000 people, and it's part of a sport festival that they hold in Romania. But, I mean, she is... It's amazing to think of it, really, because of the type of character and personality that she is, which is completely unassuming, completely down to earth. But she's just an absolute rock star. She's David Beckham in Romania. And
it's cool, isn't
I
it?
Think last year when she wasn't playing, there were several hundred at the equivalent event, and it was a sellout of 11,000 at this event last week. Daniela was playing with Halep. Dan Cahill was there, and Marius Kopil. And there was one other male player that I can't quite remember, but it really gave her she's still recent enough in retirement that I think every now and then she gets a pang of, oh, maybe I could, maybe.
Well, I don't know Daniela well. You obviously know her pretty well now, having spent a lot of time with her in the Prime Video studio, but my sense has always been that she's utterly in love with the sport.
Yes. Without question, she gets this look in her eye It's like Stefanos Tsitsipas, and she loves talking about him, and she definitely gets him in a way that not everybody does. You know, she gets this misty-eyed, sentimental look in her eye when she talks about, I mean, most things tennis-related, really, but certainly any of her own memories. And I was telling her that story that I recounted on the podcast about Tsitsipas the morning after seeing him in the hotel in Paris, the morning after the Wawrinka loss, and how devastated he still was visibly. And she just, I mean, it got to me at the time, but it really got to her. You know, that level of caring about this sport is something that she's obviously very much on a level with.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, Andy Murray, if you're listening and you fancy playing some mixed doubles at Wimbledon, you probably couldn't do much better than Daniela Hantikova, and I reckon she's up for it.
Yeah. And can I name drop a bit?
Go for it.
Okay.
I mean, you're going to.
Yeah, I'm just, you know, setting it up. And Andy Murray, if you are listening, further to our conversation earlier, yes, I was watching the match that he played against Milos Raonic on your coverage when the rain delay filling was going on, and he walked past. And he said, oh, what are you watching?
And hang on, were you just media director of the FIBA 2 Championships? Are you just...
I'd sort of got it on in my peripheral vision.
Sat on your own in a corner.
Kind of.
Watching the 2016 final.
This is genuinely how my day went, right? I mean, I am the media director, but I don't sit in the media room. And one of the reasons I don't is because otherwise I just keep getting asked for the order of play and where the toilets are and things like that. So, because, I mean, that's more or less what I'm good for. But... So what I do is I sit next to the tournament director, Stephen Farrow, so that whenever he makes a big decision, I can be there to relay it to as many people as possible and just concentrate on what I'm doing. But yes, I do like to keep an eye on, A, the coverage from BBC and particularly Prime Video, see how Catherine's getting along, see, make sure she's not having a, you know, giving me a hard time on air or anything like that. And so I have
that. You featured a lot in our coverage today.
I was on your coverage today a little bit, wasn't I? Mm. But I was watching this match out of the corner of my eye. Amazing match, Raonic against Murray. And just as Murray walked through the office and saw me watching it, and he goes, and actually I think he said something like, aren't you supposed to be working? And I said, yeah, I just thought I'd watch this. I'm just waiting for you to pull your socks up and make a comeback at the moment because you lost the first set. And then he came back about an hour and a half later when he'd actually mounted his comeback, and he walked through and he said, you know, they'd announced the play was done for the day, and he goes, good night to everybody, you know, night, night, see you tomorrow. And then he comes back and he goes, who won that match you were watching? And I said, yeah, you just scraped it. A bit lucky, but and he was very jolly. Very jolly, it was Andy Murray. So, I did think you were a bit lucky, Andy, in that particular final against Milos Raonic, who played superbly.
Back when he had John McEnroe in his corner. He had Lendl on one side, McEnroe on the other. Looking back, I mean, I felt just a little bit sad watching it. I mean, it was wonderful, but with everything wonderful that's in the past and feels like it might not return, it's tinged with sadness, isn't it? I mean, saw Raonic in the players' lounge today, and look, you know, he might have a great grass court season. He's a bit of an unknown quantity at the moment, having not really played on clay. He's got Santoro in his team, which, you know, they've not really played much together since teaming up in Indian Wells. Well, to be fair, he did have a good week, but he just doesn't look the same guy. Doesn't look like the same. He's not walking the same way. There's something about the way he was strutting about the court during that, and the way he, in the speeches afterwards, both speeches after that final were amazing because it was Father's Day, wasn't it? And Andy Murray was a new father to his first child at the time, and I think Raonic paid tribute to that, both his victory and said, you know, it's Father's Day, I'm pleased you've been able to do this, and it was all just, and he said,
which is a total lie, because he's not happy for him, is he?
No, but he said with this real confidence and sense of belonging, I hope to see you again in 3 weeks' time and we play a rematch of this. And so
that.
It turned out to be. And yes, he got roundly beaten in that final, but he was confident that he was going to get there, I think.
He thought he was going to win that Queen's final the way it was going, because he was setting a break up, and Andy Murray was not playing badly and then there was that inspirational backhand cross-court return.
You really were watching it today, weren't you?
I loved that backhand return. I've watched that a lot of times.
But it's... Yeah, it was... Yeah, it's just the passing of time is sad, isn't it, sometimes?
Yeah.
We were all 3 years younger.
We were.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at UH1.com.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. So the rest of the day, you said you had Mark Philippoussis in your studio today. There's a name that... I mean, it's 22 years since
I cannot believe it's
You showed some
years.
Of the footage, didn't you, from him winning this title 22 years ago and beating Goran Ivanišević in the final. And there he was sitting next to you. And, I mean, my first memory of him is his win over Sampras at the Australian Open, where he absolutely thrashed Sampras, who was world number one at the time, three straight sets.
It's funny, we ended up talking in great length, actually, about the fact that he is one of those players that doesn't really remember much, doesn't remember the details. You know, some ex-tennis players just remember, they remember forehands, backhands, every dodgy line call they ever had, every time they were wronged by an umpire, they remember everything. Greg is one of those people. He remembers everything. And Mark Philippoussis, I mean, he couldn't remember much of that final.
Well, see, Greg needs to remember it because he's going to be a lawyer, isn't he? So, you know, like detail.
Apparently so, yes. Watch this space, people. Or don't, if you can't bear the thought of it. What he remembered about that final was the fact that, and when I watched the footage back, it was clear. I'm not sure if people really realised at the time, but he thought when he won the match that he thought it was a five set, he thought it was best of five. And when the umpire, and when he clinches the match, when he clinches that game and the match, he does a small fist pump and walks towards the chair. And as he's walking, the umpire says, game, set, and match. And there's this look of like, oh, okay, great.
Yeah, no, and then he goes, I sort of realised when I lifted the trophy that, oh, we finished then.
Yeah, brilliant. But that's what he doesn't remember much of the match at all. I tell you what, though, unfortunately, it was off air because, you know, we had him in for half an hour in there and we covered all sorts of topics and I'd love to have gone longer, but it felt like exploitation of the poor bloke who was desperately wanting to get back to his hotel to watch more episodes of Killing Eve, which is apparently what he's doing with his free time. But anyway, he does remember, he said the match he does most vividly remember is that match against Sampras at the Australian Open. Suddenly, he said, oh, yeah, I remember most of that.
Yeah.
And I found that really interesting.
It was the equivalence of sometimes watching Del Potro these days or Wawrinka, that otherworldly field, as though some larger force has just taken over a human and made them super strong. And it was incredible. And I always feel a little bit sad, really, when I see Mark Philippoussis in a way, because he had such promise and he could have been an incredible champion. And I think he would admit himself he made some mistakes in his career, but the main thing was that six knee surgeries he told us he'd had?
Six knee surgeries.
His knees could not carry his frame, really. That was the thing.
Yeah, I mean, I used to feel quite sad about Mark Philippoussis. We both used to work with him on the Champions Tour.
He's a very nice fella, isn't he?
Lovely guy. I always just felt this sort of tinge of regret in him all the time. And I actually don't so much feel that anymore. I think he's genuinely happy. I mean, he's one of those people that you don't even need to ask him to get him to produce photos of his kids. He's right there with you. You start the sentence of, oh, how old's your... And before you know it, the photos are in front of you. The phone's out, the photos are in front of you. And look, they are completely adorable. But he seems really happy now, and I'm so pleased with that, because I do think he went through a period of reckoning with his career and regrets and probably struggled to make himself okay with that. I mean, he was just captivating, talking about Nick Kyrgios, captivating.
Oh, right. What did he say?
He said that he thinks he's really unhappy. He sees a guy that's really unhappy and crying out for help. He might not realise that's what he's doing, but that's what Mark Philippoussis sees. He says, I asked him whether he'd ever been approached for guidance, be it formal or completely informal, and he said his team had reached out to him, Nick Kyrgios' team had reached out to him, and he said no to it because he said it'll only work... Anything I have to say will only have any impact if the request comes from Nick himself. Nick's got away. He said he would love nothing more than Nick to come up to him and just chew the fat with him. He said not even about tennis. He said he just wants to sit and talk about life with him. And he's desperate for that to happen. But it needs to come from him.
Be an interesting one, wouldn't it? Is there anybody that could get through...
He said he's desperate to walk over to him and just go, how you doing? Like,
well, he's got
not tennis,
chance,
but
yeah.
How are you doing?
Come on, he's got a chance.
I know, but he wants Nick to come to him.
Oh, okay. Because they're sharing a player lounge this week.
And you know...
And Nick's in a good mood.
He's in a good mood. But Kyrgios is somebody that he needs people to get him. He loves Andy Murray because he feels like Andy Murray gets him and understands him. And I'm not sure there's anyone on the planet that understands him or has the potential to understand him like Mark Philippoussis.
It's very interesting. Very interesting. Incidentally, we referenced, I think it was yesterday's podcast or the day before, about the interviews that have been done by young 9-year-old Vuk Vučić, who has been interviewing all the players for us here at this tournament, and he interviewed Nick Kyrgios, and I would not do it justice if I tried to describe it. All I can say is go to Queen's Tennis Twitter and watch it. It's just fantastic, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we ran a press conference that Vuk was a part of, along with three other very adorable, slightly less confident young children. Vuk was definitely the bolshiest of the four.
Yeah, all representatives of the Tennis for Kids campaign.
Yeah, I mean, they were fabulous, and they did a press conference with Stan Wawrinka, and I think as we discussed, perhaps during the French Open, it's all a bit of a blur now, Stan, really likeable, nice guy, but quite difficult to get anything of substance out of him in press conferences. Well, it turns out the answer is bring in a load of really cute kids.
Yeah. And the other shame is, you know, some players are difficult to interview, and then when you get them off mic, they are the life and soul. They're sociable. They're pulling your leg. They're having fun. I didn't really know Stan Wawrinka before this week. That is what I'm finding. I don't know really how you interview
him. You two are having Twitter bants. Well, that hasn't gone unnoticed.
I mean, I can't comment other than to say he comes in the office a lot, Stephen's office, and he just seems to want to make juvenile conversation, for which I'm absolutely right up there for.
Should bring Vuk back in.
There was a moment where he came up to one of the people working in that office, and he said, "What do you eat at this time of day?" It was about 4 o'clock. and we were all waiting, watching the rain. And she said, "Oh, it's tea time," you know. And he goes, "Oh yeah, like those what are they called? Those things that you eat with the cream." And she said, "Scones," you know.
Ooh, did she say it like that?
Cream tea, something like that. How do you say it?
Scones.
Scones.
But we are at the Queen's Club, so scones.
Which one's the posh one?
Scones.
Okay, it's scone then.
You remember your roots, David.
Yeah, right, it's gone then, isn't it? Stan, the look on his face when he described this thing, clearly adored these things, and I just said, come on, it's not athlete's food, though, is it? And he said...
Oh, Diesel?
He said, come on, man, I'm not an athlete, you know? He said, I'm old school. He said, I mean, look at me. I'm not an athlete. I mean, he is an athlete. If you actually look at him, he's got a six-pack now, but he's a big lad, isn't he? And he used to like going down the pub. But he...
Are you saying he no longer likes going down the pub?
No, I think he does, but he's... I mean, look, he's an incredible worker. He's obviously supremely fit, but he also... He's a bit more of a normal bloke, isn't he? I mean, as he said at the time, I'm in my 30s, you know, well into my 30s, and I don't have to worry about that anymore. It was the gist of what he was saying. I'm not going to bother eating all that rubbish. I'll eat whatever I want. But anyway, he's been good company in a sort of leg-pulling kind of way.
I think everybody does get the sense that he's very good company, which is why it's notable that you don't get so much out of him in interviews, I think, because there's that frustration of feeling, oh, there's some gold there. We just can't tap into it. But not everyone's a performing monkey, are they? I mean, it's...
So the day as a whole, just to finish off, and we'll have a quick look at the order of play, but the day as a whole, I mean, it's been frustrating for people, hasn't it? And all we try to do at the tournament, I don't know whether we get it right every time, but you're just trying to let people know what's happening as much as you can, why you haven't taken the covers off when it stopped raining for a bit. And the truth is... Graeme Kimpton, the groundsman, says, you know, if it's about to rain in 10 minutes and we know that on our radar, why would we bother taking the covers off? And then there's a sort of 40-minute period, he says, between making the decision to take them off and the court being playable, because the courts have got to air and dry out, otherwise you risk them being too slick and people falling over and hurting themselves. But yeah, we got to 5 o'clock and it was just clear, we can't play. We can't play in this, or you can't make the players wait any longer. It's just getting ridiculous. And all the people in the stands and better to just, you know, give them a refund and hopefully come back and try again tomorrow. Andy Murray will play his doubles match now on Thursday. But it does mean...
Keeps him in the tournament longer.
Not being done for that. But the order of play for tomorrow is 4 singles matches on centre, which, you know, I think they're the same 4 matches that there would have been today, aren't they?
Yes, just in a slightly different configuration, because Shapovalov and Del Potro
is first.
Yes, they're first because Del Potro plays in doubles.
He's got doubles, yes. And then it's Evans Vavrinka, it's Edmund Tsitsipas, and then it's Dimitrov against Ogier Aliassime. What's happened in Halle today and Birmingham? This is what I don't understand. I come from near Birmingham. How come they got some play today?
I don't know.
And London didn't?
That doesn't
happen, ever.
What has happened in... Well, I tell you what, in... Birmingham, they've had some corking matches today. Osaka against Sakari.
Don't rub it in.
As a first round match.
Who won that?
Naomi Osaka, 6-1, 4-6, 6-3.
Wow, that is a good match.
Brilliant match. Putintseva beat Harriet Dart 1-4. And as we mentioned yesterday, Dart and Williams are no more. That was a one match partnership.
Fleeting partnership.
Fleeting.
Three setter though.
It has not been a good day for Matt, perhaps why he's not appearing on this podcast, because both Diana Sremska and Victoria Kuzmova have lost.
There was a moment when he started live streaming the Kuzmova match just because he was so depressed about the weather here.
Oh, well, I doubt that would have helped.
No.
Victoria Kuzmova lost to Maria Sharapova in Mallorca. And
Maria Sharapova?
Yeah, first match in 4 months.
I genuinely didn't know she played tennis.
I didn't know she... I think she perhaps took a last... she's a last-minute wild card. It was 7-6-6, love.
I'll tell you what. I mean, I don't know how Kuzmova played, but that is a good win for Sharapova, straight off 4 months out.
Matt can possibly hear you over the divide.
Yeah, which is why I'm
not sure grass is Kuzmova's thing.
I think it should be. She's got a massive serve.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, Kerber also won in...
I can feel Matt's disapproving look in your
Alison
direction.
Risk lost to somebody I've never heard of, which is a bit of a surprise in Mallorca. Okay. Perhaps a bridge too far for her. Azarenka lost to Garcia. That's a heck of a first round as well, isn't it? Lise Cornet, Anisimova.
Who won that?
She won through over T. Martinkova.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
We were all over that one. Sam Stoser beat Zhang and Sevastova 1-3. That's Mallorca. Birmingham I was following more closely today. I couldn't believe that Sakari against Osaka was a first rounder. Potentsky Dart, Gerges beat Yastremska. Petra Martic beat Alexandrova. I tell you what, I find this result very interesting. Yelena Ostapenko, 6-love, 6-2 over Iga Swiatek.
Oh, yeah.
Last year's junior Wimbledon champion, one of Matt's darlings.
He's not had a good day, has
he? He's not had a good day at all.
He's had a total washout,
but,
and he's
I mean,
players.
I know this potentially sounds silly, because Swiatek is, you know, she's 18, she's barely played at senior level, although, of course, had a run at the French Open. But she's a qualifier, which is always dangerous. We know she loves grass. We know how dangerous and talented she is, and we also know how out of form Ostapenko is. So I think Ostapenko, love and two over Swiatek. I think that's a big win for Yelena Ostapenko, who
She's
now
back.
Plays Joe Konta.
Right.
It's the start of something.
Okay.
That's the new phrase.
Ostapenko's in the mix. Roger Federer defeated John Millman, 7-6-6-3, US Open revenge. Joe Wilfried Tsonga, winner. Gasquet won. Chorich won. And that'll just about do it. I think we have been the Tennis Podcast at this point, here on this Tuesday evening in rainy London.
Is this the first Tennis Podcast without tennis?
I think it probably is. But it's been good. I hope you agree. I wonder if anybody's listening. Is anybody still there? Anyway, we've been brought to you in association with The Telegraph, executive produced...
David Cameron came today.
Tennisballs.com, that's enough of that.
But he came and watched, how long, he watched no tennis.
Well, there's a blessing. And and executive, what is it? Mascot is Rio with a Y. Sorry, Rio with a Y. We'll be back tomorrow, hopefully, with tennis having actually been played. Bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.